The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Luke. Glory to you, O Lord. The apostles said to the Lord, "Increase our faith." The Lord replied, "If you have faith the size of a mustard seed, you would say to this mulberry tree, 'Be uprooted and planted into the sea,' and it would obey you. Who among you would say to your servant who has just come in from plowing or tending sheep in the field, 'Come here immediately and take your place at table'? Would he not rather say to him, 'Prepare something for me to eat. Put on your apron and wait on me while I eat and drink. You may eat and drink when I am finished.' Is he grateful to that servant because he did what was commanded? So should it be with you. When you have done all you have been commanded, say, 'We are unprofitable servants. We have done what we are obliged to do.'" The Gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ. So I'm not going to really unpack the readings today like what we normally do here, because I wanted to highlight a saint whose feast day is today. Every day of the year, there are many different saints who are being celebrated, but just maybe some of them are more regional or lesser known. And there might be some 30 to 40 some saints on any given day who it's their feast day. And woe to you if your feast day, if you're a saint and your saint, your day falls on the same day as St. Patrick, because it's like, well, in New York, no one's going to remember you because everyone's doing St. Patrick. And if your day falls on a Sunday, well, normally we're unpacking the readings and things like that, so you get skipped, at least don't get a mention. However, I'm going to make an exception to that today, because there's actually three that are just amazing today. I'm only going to unpack one of them. The first one is St. Francis Silos, was a German priest who immigrated here to the United States, landed here in New York, was ordained, I think, down in Baltimore, became a Redemptorist priest from the Redemptorist congregation, was a missionary all throughout the whole Northeast, and then it finally ended up down in Louisiana, where his life ended, and he's buried down there, and he's a canonized saint. So his feast day is today, October, what is it, the 5th? Also, St. Faustina Kowalska, the famous St. Faustina of the Divine Mercy Chaplet, Divine Mercy devotion. And her, we often think about her on Divine Mercy Sunday, the first Sunday after Easter, but today is her feast day. And I have a real great debt of gratitude to her. I used her diary for 8 years as my daily meditation. For about an hour a day for 8 years, I was delving in and into her diary. So her relationship with the Lord has been a huge inspiration for me. But that's not who I'm going to unpack. I want to talk about Blessed Bartolo Longo. Raise your hand if you've heard of Bartolo Longo. One, okay, there's just a couple. Good. This is a good one. Okay. So Bartolo Longo, he's Italian. He was born in the 1840s and in a small town close to Naples, Italy. And at that time, first of all, his dad passed away when he was really young and is like about like 4 or 5 years old. And then his mother died a little bit after that. It was an uncle that was taking care of him. And by the time he gets to goes off to the university to study law, with a degree that he'll eventually get, the Italian peninsula is under extreme religious and political turmoil. What happened is that there's this, just like what happened in France back in a similar period of time, the French Revolution. There's the same thing happened in Spain, same thing happened in Mexico. Well, it was happening now in Italy. And so there's this great huge wave of anti-Catholicism sweeping through through universities, through the political sphere, and it ended up becoming actually an armed revolution where the bad guys took over a lot of most of Italy and just left the papal states down this one little thing, which is the Vatican today. Anyways, that's a separate thing. But Bartolo, bless it, or at the time just Bart, I guess maybe, Bartolo goes off to the university, and he's got some faith, but not much. And very quickly, that little spark of a flame is just blown out. Because in the university where he was studying this massive anti-Catholicism, he had, as a professor, an ex-priest who just railed against the Catholic Church. He said, "Oh, this is stupid, this is just all grandma stuff, and it's just all superstition, and there's nothing really to this, and this is the Enlightenment, this is where it really is." There's a lot of political stuff that was mixed in there about how we have a right to just take this and grab it for our own. So he starts imbibing this stuff and just soaks it right in and loses his faith entirely. He's not practicing it at all. Nature abhors a vacuum. Who said that? Was that Newton or somebody else? Anyways, but there is a spiritual principle that works like that way, that nature abhors a spiritual vacuum. It's going to get filled up with something else. Because we have this deep need and desire, and it's wired into us that there is a spiritual realm, and if we're not in contact with it one way, our souls are going to start to reach out and try to find it in some other way. And that's exactly what Bartolo started to do. He had this sense of the supernatural. He knew not to look to the Catholic Church. No, can't go there. That's all superstitious. So he started to go to seances because he wanted to be back in touch with his dad. He wanted to talk to his father. And all this spiritualism, magnetism, I didn't get to look up what that is exactly, but it's tarot cards, dabbling in the occult. And he was actually having real spiritual experiences there. Real, but it wasn't from God. He starts then dabbling and getting involved in Satanism and goes all into that and becomes ordained as a Satanist priest. So when in the moment of his consecration as a satanic priest, some of the people that were there gave testimony later that they actually heard him speaking in voices that were not his. He became possessed by one, possibly multiple demons by just turning his whole body, his whole soul over to the devil. He became a channel for that. Sorry, this is probably more dramatic than I was expecting. Sorry for parents, you can like work this over later with your kids. Sorry. But there's a good story. This is where it's going to go. This is good, where it's going to go. As you know, and that's the way the story ends. No. But after having become possessed, his health started to completely fall apart. Physically, he had this really bad stomach pain started coming out of nowhere. He couldn't eat anymore. He starts losing weight. He's having hallucinations. He said he knew and sensed this presence of an angel by his side that was always guiding him and telling him to do different things and enlightening him. But he started to realize that this angel, it keeps saying contradictory things. It says one thing and then it changes a different thing. And he was kind of perplexed by that, like that didn't make sense to him. And little by little, he began to realize that's not actually an angel. Well, it is, but it's a fallen angel. But now he's stuck. He doesn't know what to do. Thanks be to God, he had some friends who saw him falling apart. He had a professor in the university where he somehow managing to finish his law degree while this is all going on. A professor who just said, "Hey, you're emaciated. What's going on?" And he kind of talked a little bit about it. And this professor found a Dominican priest who came and started to work with him and started to literally there was a process of deprogramming, first of all, what he had learned from all these other secularist professors, and then what he had learned through this false spirituality, through all these things. And so through this catechesis, and then eventually through confession and reconciliation with the church, and starts to pray, he's actually freed from this possession. And then for the rest of his life, it'd be something that it wouldn't necessarily haunt him, but it'd be something that motivated him to make amends for all the damage that he had done to spiritually and otherwise through his time as a satanic priest. By the way, just as an aside, the reason why the Catholic Church forbids Catholics to use tarot cards, horoscope, and Ouija board and things like that isn't because it's just the tool of some con artists, which it is, but also because in the right hands it actually works, and it's not God's power that's working through those things. So that's why we should stay absolutely away from anything that is New Age, anything that is these other spiritualisms and spiritualities that are not Christian, because while there can be the devil uses bits and pieces of light and truth and then mix it in with lies in order to pull us off the path. And that's exactly what happened to Bartolo. May have happened to people that you know as well. They lose their faith. 1872 comes along, and he's now fully converted back to the faith, and he's living this, and he still has he became a Dominican tertiary, and he's praying the rosary constantly. That's his light and gives nourishment to his soul. He goes to Pompeii, which is outside of Naples, the famous one, and there he was there to do some legal work for a friend of his. And it was actually debt collection with some of the poor people there, but to be honest, that's what it was. But when he got there, he starts speaking to all these renters that owed money, and he starts to realize these people have no idea what their Catholic faith is. None. And so they were mixing in just like literal superstitions and kind of blending that in with actual content of the faith. Some of them didn't really even know that there's only one God. Some thought that there was three, and thought that maybe Blessed Virgin Mary is another one, another fourth God, or so. It was just complete, because no one had ever catechized them and taught them the faith. And so he said, "Well, I got to do something about this." And so he came up with this idea: I'm going to create a grand festival, and we're going to have fireworks, we're going to have all this great food, and we're going to have catechesis, and we're going to have mass, and we're going to have the rosary. It sounds like the San Gennaro festival before it actually, but without the rosary and without all that. That's what he was doing. And so he puts this together, and it's rained out the one day he goes to actually, but he wasn't deterred. He said, okay, next year, do the same thing. And so eventually he starts to get some traction with this. And he said, but we need some kind of a better, I mean, there's a little church there, but we need a place that promotes the rosary. And so he built a shrine dedicated to Our Lady. He called it Our Lady of the Rosary, but it ended up becoming Our Lady of Pompeii. And so he founds this church. He's just a layman. He has not become a priest or a deacon or anything. He's just living out his faith. He ends up then starting a school for children of the incarcerated, and there was a lot in that area. He starts an orphanage, and basically he spends his whole life finding ways to promote the faith. He had one time, this was like in the 18, he passed away in 1926, but like it was like 1905, 1910, somewhere around there, he gets this inspiration to do a massive campaign for world peace. And so he had something like 4 million signatures, all kinds of dignitaries. They're just trying to create a movement, because the world was in such turmoil at that time. World War I is just around the corner. He was nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize for that effort. And then a second time, he was nominated another year later for the Nobel Peace Prize. He didn't receive it either time, because this was a sheerly religious thing, and they were looking for something, I guess, a little more secular. But it kind of shows the impact that he was having, not just there in this little shrine in there, but throughout all of Italy and even on a global scale. Bartolo Longo. He passes away at the ripe old age of 83, and is buried in the shrine that he built in 1926. About, what is it, some like 8 or 10 blocks from here is the U.S. National Shrine of Our Lady of Pompeii, which he wasn't able to come over here to dedicate it himself, but that's the origin of Our Lady of Pompeii here, just here in Manhattan, not so far away. He was beatified by John Paul II in 1980, and he's about to be canonized on October 19th this year, this month. And so I don't know what kind of party they're going to throw over there at Our Lady of Pompeii, but I think I want to be there. So this is a gentleman who goes from just this kid who lost his faith to satanic priest to revert to the faith to canonized saint. There's a saying, every sinner has a future, and every saint has a past. Well, boy, he really's got a past. But God, that is not what determines us. And God always has a path forward for us. So I would be remiss if I didn't tack on a couple takeaways for things that we might take inspiration from. First of all, just the power of God to save somebody from that kind of scenario. But then also the tenacity and the spiritual willpower of and the spiritual desire that his friends had to not let him not just to write him off. As they were working on him hard and praying hard. The power of your prayers for your loved ones, from your friends, do not underestimate what that can do. And don't underestimate what that can do in your communities on a larger scale beyond just your immediate circle of friends and family. It's powerful. God wants to use that. And that's what he did with blessed, soon to be Saint Bartolo Longo. Also, for you, the parents out there, and this is, sorry if this is a little bit of a rant on my part, what was happening in the universities back then still happens in the universities today. Kids go off, they sign up for a philosophy class, they sign up for the political science class, they sign up for a religion class, and it completely undoes everything that they had learned that you've strived to give them, inculcate in their souls as Christians, as Catholics. That happens in some of the most prestigious universities across the country and around the world. And so be careful who you're entrusting your kids to. Because this is the kind of thing that can happen. Completely undermine it. I don't need to name names. There's even Catholic universities that, under the banner of Catholic university, do the same thing. I attended one of them. It wasn't a legionary university, and they were just pumping out critical race theory in the whole time. I was like, gosh, would you guys please get a grip on your identity? Sorry, okay, that's the rant. I'll stop right there before I get all worked up. So that's another one, another takeaway from there. But then lastly, I just want to encourage you. I don't know what God is asking or will inspire in your hearts, but when you just say yes to the thing that God is placing in front of you, that inspiration in your heart, you know, I think I ought to call this person. I think I ought to, you know, I've always wanted to do a Bible study, and I haven't heard any at Old St. Pat's, so maybe I could just lead one, and there's all this material online that I don't have to be an expert, and I could do that. We'll do that. Let me know. Let's get that going. I mean, the lay people like Bartolo Longo and yourselves have a massive role to play in assuring that the faith gets handed on. There's a connection to the second reading. I remind you, stir into flame the gift that God has given you. He's given a flame to you in your hearts. Stir it up. Pass it on. It's a gift. It brings light. That's what happened to Bartolo. Somebody gave him the gift of light and wouldn't let him go until they saw that had been set ablaze and the darkness had been banished from his life. There may be someone in your life that God is calling you to do that and be that person for them. Don't let that slip by. Okay, we're going to continue on now with the Mass and with this beautiful, wonderful relic of the True Cross. And there's just one other, maybe call it an announcement, but when we get to the Our Father prayer after the consecration, right before communion, we have in your white bulletin, the white worship aid, the one that has the music in it, we have it written there in Latin with the Gregorian chant. And what I want to do is, this is new, I wanted to start singing this together in the ancient language of the church that our ancestors have been singing it in for probably, maybe 1700 years, something like that. And it's not just because we're trying to be all rad trad and like traditionalist or something. No, it's not that. It's like we want to be able to pray in the same language together that they are praying simultaneously in Rome, that they're praying simultaneously on all parts of the world, so that as when we're in moments we're all together, we all can pray it in the same language. That's the purpose of the church using Latin as its international language. And so I want you, and we're going to be doing this, to learn the melody. Super simple. You probably even heard it before. And also learn the words. It's the Our Father. You got it memorized. And so you don't need to, you have the English words memorized. And so you know what it means. But we still want to pray it with our faith and with our full hearts as we do that. So we'll be doing that at the moment of the Our Father.